So I want to welcome on stage Dele, who is going to moderate the session. Dele, please call your panelists.
Okay, so they should be coming in a couple of minutes here. They just went outside to get something to drink. Oh, they're here. Okay. So, and we're waiting for Sam. So he should be coming up here shortly. So while we wait for him, let me just greet everyone. Thanks for hanging in there. I know you guys are have been impressed and happy so far with the sessions that you've seen, the people that you've met, the networking that you've been able to do. And hopefully in the next couple of sessions that you will see before we close the event, you guys will get some value from this particular session, just like you did with the other ones. So, and then also, I hope you guys enjoyed your lunch. And but still take advantage of the fact that you're here. There are many Microsoft people here. There are other partners as well that are here. And, you know, get connected, get networked with these folks that we have here. So we're going to get started on our session. It's more of a panel discussion that we're going to have. So as Sam walks to the stage. Okay, and I'm going to give everyone a chance to get to know our panelists. I'll start off with myself as the moderator, just to introduce myself. I'm a Microsoft employee. My name is Dele Akinshade. I run the cloud strategy and our expansion ambitions across Africa. I'm based out of Redmond in the U.S. Just relocated there. Used to be out here in Nigeria covering the region. Around the cloud and enterprise solution. So I've probably seen and met with a lot of you in the room today. I'll pass on the baton to the panelists on the stage here for them to introduce themselves, talk about what they do, what companies they work for, and other things of interest that they may want to share. And then we'll go into some of the discussions that we want to have and then open up the floor towards the end for some questions. So if you guys want to take some notes, if you have any questions, you'll have that option to ask those questions. So let me let our panelists start to introduce themselves. So I'll start with you to kick us off.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I hope you're all energetic and ready for the panel. My name is Miriam, and I'm from Ethiopia, born from a French mother and Ethiopian father. I'm a co-founder of a company called Kafiya. In Ethiopia, based in Addis. We are a payments and a digital finance company. We have 5 technology platforms that runs different services in urban areas, payments. We enable utility payments and other government or citizen-to-government payments. And in the rural areas, we enable a finance institution provide their services at reach. And we also provide microinsurance services. So this is, in a nutshell, what Kafiya does.
Okay, thank you very much, Miriam. Let me hand off to you to introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is John Waivoshi. I am the founder of a company called Virtual City, based here in Nairobi. And what we do at Virtual City is that we automate the food value chain. So we look at all of the components that go into the food reaching your plate, which is from what happens in the farm, what happens in the buying process of that raw produce, what happens in the warehousing, the quality controls, the processing, the packaging, the distribution, the retail. And we basically map the value chain with different mobile tools, all of that consolidated into our common cloud network. So we look at what are the areas of inefficiency that make that produce not be able to reach processor, or what are the areas of inefficiency that make that finished product not be able to reach the retailer, and what are the costs involved, linking into mobile payments, linking into inventory control, and all that type of thing. So we basically just try and map out the whole food value chain. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, John. Can I have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Great. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kapama Yalpala. I go by KP for short. My family's from Ghana. I grew up in the U.S. I'm a health guy by training and passion. Founded a company called Access Mobile in 2011. We started our work in Uganda, and really it was about how to take advantage of digital transformation to enable healthcare facilities to drive access and quality. And we've now grown. We have an office here in Nairobi. We're starting some work in Tanzania. But generally, you know, our point of view is that, and we'll get into it on the panel, is that really it's about the fact that when you look at the health situation in African countries, people are demanding more from the health sector. And I think that there's a kind of consumer patient-driven demand for quality, which drives the healthcare facilities to need to modernize, and we want to kind of play a central role in that transition.
Okay. Thank you, KP. And then Sam?
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Gishuru. Have you guys had lunch? Good afternoon. My name is Sam Gishuru. I'm one of the founders of Nylab and also the CEO of Kuhustle.com. So basically, Nylab is a startup accelerator. We do about four things. Number one, hackathons. I'm sure there are people who write software here. We love hackathons. We do an acceleration program. What we do currently is we work with corporates, like Microsoft, for example. We'd find a corporate. We do an acceleration program for 6 months. We have an incubation program. You can come and work from our office just up on Gong Road. And we also have a seed fund, the Nylab seed fund, where we invest between $10,000 to $25,000 on startups. This is a company in partnership with ECHO, a Dutch organization. It's $1 million only. So pretty much hoping to invest in a few companies. So investors in the room, I'm definitely looking forward to chatting you up. As for Kuhustle.com, it's a software development platform like Upwork, if I put it that way. What we do is that we connect clients with software developers in Africa. It's a Y Combinator fellowship alumni company. Currently, we have over 20,000 software developers, content writers, designers on the platform. In the last 6 months, we managed to get about 525 software development projects posted on our platform. It's still a startup. It's less than a year old. It's a Delaware C Corp company, so both registered in Kenya and in the US. And happy to discuss innovations today.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys, for that set of introductions. So that's kind of to level set us as to where each person and where their expertise lie. I'm sure they have general experience as well, but as I drive the discussion and as you guys start to make notes of questions that you want to ask, you know, take that into consideration. John, I'm very interested in Virtual City. I am aware of what you guys do, but I actually wasn't aware as to around the food side of things.
Right.
So leveraging technology, how has that played a key role in improving automation? And also, does it have any impact as to yield? What is the impact that it has to consumers as well? And if there's any type of disruptions that you've seen in some of the things that your company produces that has basically kind of streamlined that whole process from, say, what you see today from maybe 10 years ago and what is possible down the line?
Right. I would say the two biggest impacts is cost of goods and fraud mitigation. So cost of goods is, so take this bottle, right? So let's assume this was milk. What you'd find is that from when it is raw milk in the cow to when it reaches your shelf in the supermarket, it's probably changed between 9 and 12 hands. And everybody has bought the milk from the next guy and added a margin and put it to the next guy and added a margin and put it to the next guy. So within that whole supply chain, it's a very traditional supply chain and has made the cost of goods very expensive. Using technology, one, the smallholder farmers or the cooperatives are able to access who the market is. Maybe the market is the dairy processor. The dairy processors are also able to access who are the retailers and go direct. So you'll find that a lot of the middlemen, if I can call them, that are in the traditional supply chains, were there because they were the only connector. Now, technology changes that. Okay. Technology changes that and says, well, I don't need to go through five steps. I know where my market is going. And we've also seen that now in the manufacture and distribution of goods in Kenya, where a few of our manufacturing customers are asking, why do I need to go through a regional distributor who then goes to a wholesaler, who then goes to a stockist, who goes to a retailer before I reach the customer? I can map where all the retail outlets are in the a country. I can lease a number of vehicles and I'll go directly there. What that does is reduces the cost. On the raw commodity side, one of the things that we've seen is that previously, when I mentioned that milk, it would go from six different hands before it reaches the processor. And at each particular hand, it would change. And so now the trader owns it, goes and sells it to the cooler, and the cooler owns it, who sells it to, and along the chain. What you're able to use technologies for is that, yes, it can still go through many vehicles and many points, but the ownership still remains with the farmer. So the end price, either it's the, I have one customer who's using the retail price, another who's using the processing price, and saying, I'm going to give that price to the farmer.
Okay.
Right? So you get the value being pushed down to the guy who actually owns the product.
Yeah.
And then the other issue, I mean, being in Kenya, the other issue is fraud, right?
Fraud, yeah.
So at any particular point, there is fraud in how the produce is weighed. So a farmer would deliver 16 kilograms of produce, and he'd be told, yes, thank you for the 16 kilograms, but three of them are the weight of the bag, right? Or actually, we are going to deduct 4 kilograms because it's a wet day.
Yeah.
Right? So we'd have all of these different types of things. So basically, you remove the power from the buying clerk, and you use technology. So he hangs his weight up there. It is 15.95, and that's what it is. That's the Bible, right? And he gets paid for that. And you do that at every particular point. So there are ways that you can then use technology whereby it is not the fact that I have more knowledge than you that I'm basically stepping on the guy below me.
Yeah.
The knowledge is now universal, and using tools we're able actually to do that.
Great, great. That's very interesting, especially around the fraud mitigation aspect of this. And thanks for sharing that with us. Mm. So Miriam, with your sector, which is more around financing and insurance, from a digital transformation standpoint, can you give us specific examples, a scenario, for instance, in Ethiopia where your services has been disruptive to the status quo? Mm-hmm.
So our business is about making transactions simple, affordable, and within reach. Looking at Ethiopia, 96 plus million population, 16 million smallholder farmers, we looked into how what the needs of smallholder farmers were. So looking at the past 16 years, there's been recurrent drought problems in Ethiopia, and we were hit very, very aggressively this year with the El Nino effect. One of the initiative we took was to actually build a product called microinsurance, in a public-private partnership with the Dutch government and in partnership with academicians, the Agricultural Transformation Agency of Ethiopia, the National Met, and the Disaster Recovery Agency. We looked at how we could actually predict this risk and avail a product to insurance companies to actually enable the farmer to be protected from this risk. So we built the product, we signed commercial agreements with insurance companies, mm-hmm. So we created a market, we availed an e-commerce type of platform to the insurance companies to be able to deliver the microinsurance. We used digital financial services to enable our agent network, deliver the product or enroll farmers into the platform, sell the policy, collect the premium, and now we're doing payouts through the agent network and using our DFS.
Okay, so when we look at this population of 16 million of small farmers, is the goal to reach out to all of them at some point, or are you currently even engaged with all of them today?
So we started, the product went live in last August.
Okay.
And we now have 5,000 farmers on the scheme. And we've done payouts last Saturday.
All right.
To 3,500 farmers. So the two insurance companies that were in that region started doing payouts. So the goal is to reach to 200,000 farmers by next year.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Thank you very much for that. KP, as you said, you're the healthcare guy on here. So as it relates to innovation and value creation within that health ecosystem, what are your thoughts? What are you seeing coming from a developed environment where you've seen healthcare delivery, your observations that you've seen even before you started your company in 2011 to after creating and what you're seeing today and where you see this going down the road? Can you share some perspectives on that?
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with the African context and work my way back. So generally, I mean, what most of us would probably agree on is we know that there's an issue of access and quality around healthcare service delivery across the board in African countries. And so fundamentally what that means is there's an imbalance in supply and demand. So there's more demand for quality healthcare services than there is supply. And typically the model has been public sector driven. So within the last, 10 to 15 years, and for some context, I was one of the early employees of the Clinton Health Initiative here in East Africa. Spent about 5 years working on the national scale health systems in the region. And a lot of the models really focused on how to enhance the capacity of public sector facilities to expand reach, predictability in service delivery, quality, and all of that. And I think that what has been recognized and kind of the elephant in the room in the health space is to know that despite all those investments, and the common theme is there's been billions of dollars pumped through these initiatives, and it sounds like a lot of money, but there's cases made that, look, we're well behind what the funding should be in the space. So there's a lag in the funding needed to drive quality through the public sector, but also expectations have not been met. And so the concurrent trend is, as you found, the growth, urbanization and the growth of the economies, particularly across certain, African countries here in East Africa and other regions, consumers are demanding more from the hospitals.
Okay.
And so for me, that's what I've seen as what I think is the real opportunity for disruption, because the consumer is saying, really, if I'm not satisfied with healthcare delivery at the clinic I go to, I'm going to go somewhere else. So for the doctor running the clinic, they know that if they don't start to respond to that, that they don't have a viable clinic, they don't have a way to sustain.
Yep.
And I think that then is driving the facilities to want to modernize digitally. And that's where we came in as a business and saw that as an opportunity.
Okay.
If you go to the U.S. side or Western markets, what you find is that there's been a lot of digital transformation, but it's fragmented. So it's siloed. So people talk about scenarios, whether in the U.S. or Europe, where you can go to one hospital and then you go to a hospital two blocks down the road and they don't know that you were at either place, right? So you have a problem of siloed information, which creates challenges. Even here in these markets, you have those challenges. We know of a case here in Kenya where there was a child who went to a clinic in a network here in Nairobi, was going to have a surgery and had an allergy to sulfa, then went to another clinic in the network to do the procedure, but that clinic didn't have the data that this child had the sulfa allergy, and then the kid died, right? So we see that in this context, what we can do as a leapfrog is kind of build more integrated digital systems where those records become more pervasive, they're accessible to the consumer so that they're empowered, and we kind of build on the demand. So I think it's a very different model now in healthcare, which people have traditionally thought was more NGO or public sector driven.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, KP. So Sam, your perspective is two sides, your involvement in the startup community and also an entrepreneur yourself. So we've talked about microinsurance, we've talked about agriculture, we've talked about healthcare. With some of the things that you guys do at NYLAB, hackathons, you're an accelerator, you're an incubator. Are you seeing alignment with the challenges and the value that they're bringing? Are you seeing alignment with some of the activities within NYLAB? So are there hackathons on themes like this? Do you have startups that you're incubating in these sectors? Is that something that you're seeing within 9/11 in your sector?
Well, yeah. Normally what happens with startups is startups don't follow problems most of the time. They follow money.
Okay.
And so if somebody is heavily investing in the healthcare sector this round, then you have a lot of young people interested in healthcare to develop solutions.
Yeah.
Of course, that's usually how it starts out. And then eventually they discover problems within these sectors and they start solving them.
Okay.
But yes, we do have a lot of interest in agriculture. We have a company called Hadi. And what Hadi does is that it started with building software management for rabbit keeping. And they have evolved to be a butchery on a mobile phone. And so basically what you do is that you order for meat from your phone and they deliver. And so they have working with suppliers, they're working with abattoirs, they're working with farmers who do rabbit farming. So they're currently one of the biggest suppliers of rabbit meat to Carnival, some of the bigger restaurants in Nairobi, I think Kempinski as well. And so we've seen them evolve from a point of just building software to manage rabbit breeding, which was quite tricky for most farmers to being that. And in the healthcare sector, we do have quite a number of companies we worked with recently because we did a hackathon with UNFPA, United Nations Population Fund, and we're currently doing one with AMREF Africa. And some of the startups that came from us for the healthcare was one, I think they're actually in the room, I just bumped into one of them, is a guy's building an artificial intelligence machine to answer questions on sexual reproductive health for young people. So in essence, what you do is, it's like Allo for Google, where you just type in a question, you know, how to have safe sex, and throws you back an answer. So some of those embarrassing challenges and embarrassing questions you couldn't ask a doctor, now you can ask using SophieBoot. The best part about it is you don't even have to download the app. You can just go to your Telegram or WhatsApp or Twitter and send it a question, and it'll DM you or send you a message. I believe the young man, Evan Samukasa, he's right over there. And so we're seeing a bit of interest in the sector, but innovation and disruption, especially in emerging markets, is driven by where people pay money. People pay for hackathons, people pay for investments, and people stimulate that ecosystem.
Okay.
It's not mostly driven by problems on the ground, and that's a bit of a challenge.
Okay. Okay. That's a great perspective there. Real quick, Maryam, what are the challenges that you see with innovation and disruption, especially in your sector, in particularly in Ethiopia? I've been to Ethiopia before, and I would like to understand as to if there's any type of challenges that you see with innovation and disruption in your context, in the country, and also the area, the field that you're in.
Well, we've seen challenges as opportunities.
Okay.
But for every time I say I come from Ethiopia and I have a business in Ethiopia, I hear all the challenges they've gone through to try and do something in Ethiopia. I think what it is that we have very strong regulations. Innovation needs to be driven by money, and I think he was saying it. People need to have access to finance to be able to innovate, and the youth needs to have access to finance to be able to innovate. But disruption is something that can happen quite easily in Ethiopia. Needs are huge. Like I said, we have a large population, and the opportunities to make improvements to people's life is massive in all sectors. And because we're such a large country, Kenya, I believe, is very focused. The population is very concentrated in certain routes. Ethiopia is a very large country, and population is spread across the territory. So reaching to people without technology is absolutely impossible.
Okay.
So technology is definitely what is required for disruption.
For disruption, okay. Real quick, KP, as an African born in outside of Africa, what roles do you see Africans in diaspora in supporting innovation here? Because I hear a lot from folks over there as to things that they take for granted as to why they're baffled as to why such things don't exist here. So what role do you think Africans in diaspora can play in supporting innovation on the continent?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important issue.
So I think one of the issues that's been brought up is kind of doing some of the, well, let me give it a few lenses. So first, it's about the market innovation. So I think that more and more we'll find innovations on the African continent that can scale globally. And I think that oftentimes there's an argument made that, you know, we have so many different African countries, so many different languages, context is key. And I think we can all agree those things matter. But also, like, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is this concept of kind of like a cultural convergence with millennials. So if you think about millennials in any part of the world, they have access to the same information. They use the same brands of phones, typically. They all use Uber. They have the same experience. They have same expectations. And I think there's some, if you looked at it as like a Venn diagram, it's becoming like more and more of this overlap, which then makes it interesting because if you think about it, if someone's innovating here in this context and has the ability to engage, whether it's a partner with like Microsoft or someone like me who's in the diaspora that wants to, you know, I'm a bit hybrid, that wants to kind of like be involved in that bridging, you can start to shift the culture of thinking here also, where people can think about their innovation in a way that's saying, I'm solving a problem that's here, but it's probably a problem that a lot of people have out there in the world. You know, not just innovating here in Kenya and then saying, maybe that is relevant in East Africa, innovating in Kenya and saying, well, I bet you this is just a human problem that people all over the world have. And I think oftentimes the thinking doesn't have that breadth because the innovators don't have that exposure. But I feel like people from the diaspora, however that plays out, have that kind of dual understanding. And at least in our company, like basically 90% of my employees are on the continent. Like in Nairobi, they're here. They're Kenyans. In Kampala, they're Ugandans. But then we have a small team of people such as myself and others who are involved in this kind of translation process. But it's a give and take because we too, as people in the diaspora, have to align ourselves sometimes where we might get off track about context. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we can push the envelope with our local teams to kind of think bigger. And, you know, my hope is that dynamic shifts how we scale. And that's something that diaspora can bring. The other thing is access to resources and capital because of the connections to these international networks that can play a role in moving beyond that seed capital into the next stage of growth.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's I've always wanted to get perspective from others, especially from the diaspora, as to what they think. And you having been here for some time and you know, gone through the process. You've gone to many countries. You've done, seen things there. It's very important to get your perspective on that. So, John, as an ISV, what are the areas you see opportunities in as it relates to disruptions, where your solutions can disrupt the status quo and leapfrog industries or consumers as to what their expectations are?
Right. One is how you use mobile to be able to transact and make payments. We're in a lucky part of the world where a lot of us are thinking through how our small merchants, whether they're kiosk or mini marts and that type of thing, going to be able to place orders, pay for those orders, and get the deliveries done without looking at complicated Amazon-type platforms. So how are we going to be able to localize them to very simple devices and be able to give the same level of improvement in efficiency that you'd get out there? So that is a huge opportunity. The other is that both on the production side of agriculture and on the distribution side, it's very small merchants, very small farmers, right? So there's this whole concept of aggregation. So anything that reaches your shelf has to be aggregated in terms of produce. How do you make sure that within that aggregation, the quality was maintained? How do you make sure that it got to where it needs to be? And then on the distribution side, whereas in the Western world, they'd probably be talking about taking an 18-wheeler and dropping 5 days of stock. Here, talking about a little kiosk that is buying half a crate of something. Mm. And then not only that, is saying, come back in the afternoon to collect your cash.
Yeah.
And then you have to figure out how you're going to use the cash. So thinking through these very localized ways that people are doing business, and then thinking through how do I use very simple tools to be able to do that. But in doing those simple tools, I'm still dealing with money, I'm still dealing with stock, I'm still dealing with very complicated things. So I still need a way to be able to solve complicated problems, but deliver it in the most simplistic way and make sure that it is actually utilized.
Okay. Thank you for that perspective. As we get close to the end of this session, real quick, Sam, in the space that you're in, you've seen a lot. You've been in this space for a very long time. You've seen things come and go in Kenya, in Africa, East Africa, and the world. And so that means you have lots of experience. You've seen it all, so to speak. You've been involved in it early. What advice can you give to a budding developer or a student that has these big dreams of, you know, creating the next M-Pesa, the next Facebook, or the next WhatsApp, or the next Google that will serve his community here in Africa? What kind of advice can you give to such a young person around that?
Well, I'm still young. haven't seen too much. But I have had the privilege of working for Nialab for 5 years. And at the same time, had the privilege of joining Y Combinator. So I got to see startups in Silicon Valley and how they operate and here. And I think disruption, as she said, Miriam said here, it's very easy. If you look at, I sometimes look at M-Pesa and I see somebody took Western Union and added SMS and now we have M-Pesa. You know, antilogs and analogs. You know, it's simple. Somebody took a mobile phone, added a taxi, the usual taxi, and you have Uber. I mean, if Brian Chesky's great experience is he looked at Craigslist and saw people posting that he was they were traveling on Craigslist. They'd like to rent out their rooms for a day or 2 days. And then he looked at hotels and took Craigslist and hotels, and you have Airbnb. So innovation is not too complicated. I had a session yesterday or the day before at Amref, and I remember the CEO of Amref, Dr. Gidinji, said, does anybody know who invented the mosquito net? You know, it is disruptive. It saved lives. It saved millions of lives. So, and we were, because we were discussing about a very small health tool that is used by African midwives to listen to the womb, and it's just, looks like a tiny vuvuzela, yeah. You know, and you listen and you can hear the heartbeat and things like that. So if you're an innovator, stop thinking complex drone, blood delivery drones in Rwanda, you know, and, you know, trying to send Elon Musk competition. I mean, like, no. Just think really, really simple. Very simple, keep it extremely simple, that a lot of people are likely to dismiss it. And you know, work with a very small group of people. I mean, don't try to get your first 10,000 customers that go for, get your first 100 users and then grow it from there. Of course, to summarize that, is that as a developer, I think, as you asked me to talk to developers, startups are not built, in the media, they're not built just in public-facing places, even like here. Startups are built when you're behind your computer writing that code and when you're meeting the customer. And so those are just the two places you have to do. You're building the app itself and you're actually hanging out with your customer a lot more to understand them. Okay. So, yeah, that's my
Thank you.
Advice for many years.
Thank you for that perspective. I didn't mean to age you by my setup there. As we get close to wrapping up, are there any questions from anybody in the audience? If you guys can and be very quick, please, with your questions so we can get back on time. Just introduce yourself and ask your question.
Hello, my name is Dr. Warogoro Wanjao. My question is to KP and Sam. I'm in the health industry and I work in a rural part of Kenya. I want to challenge the disruption of the health industry, not because it's not being tried, but are we missing something? I've even sat in Nailab in some hackathon brainstorming sessions for health. But as someone in the health industry, I've never met a patient who's used an app. I don't know any of my doctor friends who've used apps. Apart from bringing myself to the technology space, the health space is not discussing health. The health space is not discussing technology. And that's the more granular part of it. Right. Also on the policy level, I'd hear them talking about e-health in WHO forums and UN forums. Maybe this goes more to KP. But there are no technology people sitting there. And so as a health practitioner in Kenya, so to speak, and in Africa on a wider level, I can't say that I've felt in any tangible way the disruption of the health field. Is there something missing? Because does health have a different dynamic? Mm-hmm. That's my question.
Okay. Thank you for that. Good question, guys.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. So the first thing to share is that if you look at just diffusion of innovation generally, healthcare and finance oftentimes, and I think in the African context, finance is changing this, but healthcare particularly is one of the last sectors to innovate. And I think part of it is about the culture of the space. So if you think about the training as of a medical doctor, or in your case as a health worker, it's a very conservative model. It's scientifically driven. It's driven by not making mistakes. It's driven by evidence, right? And so if you look at it, because I have these issues, so we're partnering with most of the associations in the region to do just what you're talking about. Part of our ability to grow and disrupt is an education process. And if you look at most ministries or the heads of these associations, they're, you know, forgive me, but they're older doctors. They're not, that's part of why I brought up this dynamic around millennials, because on the one hand, the decision makers in these hospitals are maybe skeptical about technology. And until you can start to get them bought in, you have a challenge. And I think you see this in Western markets as well. So it's not just here. Even in the US and Europe, it's only now that hospitals are going digital. It's only recently that even in the US, they had health reform that forced basically technological innovation in. So it's not something specific to Kenya or this region. It's really sector specific, and it's about the culture. But I think as you have more and more young doctors who are millennials and who are tech savvy, they're going to start to shift the dynamic. And then that patient as well, who's in that millennial category and is more tech savvy, will start to expect to engage, at least in our hypothesis, the health sector in that way. So at least that's what we're observing. But to your point, a lot of the work that I've had to do the last 5 years, I mean, Africa Health Business Forum, East Africa Health Federation, we're partnering with the Kenya Medical Association. We've had to do a lot of that work to build the awareness. So I think that was a very important point.
Okay. Who has a mic? Okay.
Maybe I can add something.
My name is...
Question? Sorry.
Yes?
Just to mention to the doctor who works in the rural Kenya, I mean... Personally, I don't think, I know we're in a Microsoft event, but I don't think technology is necessarily digital. You know, as a doctor in rural Kenya, I mean, you can do a lot of other things that are actually innovative. And to save more mothers right now, and a quick example is have a 9-month pregnancy calendar for every mother that reports to your hospital and says she's pregnant, because they, most of them don't understand when to go for antenatal care, as we've noticed. And as KP has said, it's a lot more, I've noticed that doctors and techies rarely mix unless you force them to mix. Mm-hmm. You know, healthcare workers just hate technology for whatever reason, and geeks here rarely go to hospital. We need to figure that out.
Exactly.
Anyway, they spend too much time behind a computer. They're very low risk. So we'd have a lot more healthcare workers and doctors mixing. I think a lot, there's something good that would come out of there. So sorry to interrupt you.
Okay. My name is Njiri, and I work for a company called Lenity Dynamics Africa. My question is to you, Sam. At what point does a startup qualify for funding or just exposing them to investors? Because I think personally, as a tech enthusiast and also where I work, we have some pretty good ideas that maybe are motivated by solutions, not necessarily money to begin with. So at what point does a startup qualify for that? Number two is not really a question to you, Virtual City, sorry, I forgot your name. So in the sector where you're in, the automation process from the whole chain from production to the consumer, I think you should also consider things like, right now, your automation is catering for efficiency, you know, reduction of cost, but also improvement of the service, like delivery, because I think that's an area where if that was taken care of, it can also encourage guys to be more productive, the entire society, and also to be able to embrace technology a bit more. So if you've not done anything when it comes to delivery of service, I think you should consider it. Yep.
Okay, so Sam?
I just want to answer the first question. There's so many complex terms we hear when you talk to investors, traction, your growth curve, do you have a hockey stick growth curve and all of those things. But I like to simplify the question and say, do you know what it takes for you to buy a phone for 40,000 shillings, $400? Is you spend a week looking at different phones. You look at the Tecno, you look at Samsung, you look at the iPhone, and you're just buying a phone that's tangible. Now, I want you to imagine that you're talking to somebody who is supposed to put $1 million on your company and it's not tangible. They can't see what you have done. So when you're ready with something they can see tangibly, they can see that you've built a product and you have a number of customers on it, that's a good time to talk to investors. Before that, because you have an idea in your head, please don't talk to any investor. It's just a waste of time. So tangibly, remember that it has to be tangible. You have to show that a number of people are using it. You have to show that it has a potential to make money, because he's not just giving you his money. He wants his money back in 10 years or 5 years. So make sure it's tangible. So just avoid the complex technicals.
Okay. Thank you for that. John?
On the issue of service delivery, we are actually seeing that happening quite a bit, especially on the distribution side from our corporate customers, where they're using technology to, one, understand what they call the universe, right? So where are all of these outlets? What are they buying? When do they buy? Why do they buy? When do we not have, when do we have stockouts and that type of thing? So there's actually a lot going on right now in enterprise customers trying to understand what exactly is going on in the market. So irrespective of what your sales reps are telling you or what your distributors are telling you, let's use data. Right, so we've actually got one customer who's using data dashboards to determine on where he's going to send his vehicles, how often, on what days, and that type of thing. So people, customers are really beginning to do that. I think the key is, how do we use technology to deliver to them the information packaged in such a way that they can make a better service delivery decision? And that is what everybody is struggling to do. So how do we package this information well? Because the information is now flowing through all of the different technologies.
Okay. So thank you guys very much. That will be the last question.
I had a question really that I need to ask.
Sorry, we've run out of time.
Yeah, we've run out of time. So if you have any other questions, the panelists will be, you can catch them after the session to ask your question. But real quick, just to summarize, I'll have the panelists just give us a quick one word, two word, or a sentence as to your thoughts or advice to give to the folks here, and then we can close shop. So let me start off with Mariam.
So I think, and probably I'm addressing the startups and the youth, is don't lose hope. There's many opportunities, and like Sam was saying, don't think innovation has context. So anything, what it doesn't need to be, what innovation is in the US or in the Western market does not need to be the same as in our countries. So innovation is contextual. So don't lose hope and keep up your hopes.
Okay, thank you. John?
Mine is that I think it's an exciting time. When we started this, doing what we're doing many, many years ago, we were banging on the doors trying to preach the need for technology and how it can help. The market has shifted. Now it is customers coming and saying, this is what we want to do with technology, how are you going to help us, right? So that opportunity has now been created. And then, of course, now you've got tools like the mobile and the cloud where you're able to do things pretty inexpensively, so you're actually able to deliver some of this. So I think we are in a very good place right now where the market is actually the one demanding, and a lot of us are rushing to try and keep up with the market demand.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, John. KP?
Just building on the same things, themes, that persistence is key, because solving any problem worth solving is going to be hard. So, you know, as has been said, don't lose hope. Things are changing, so we're not stuck in whatever current dynamic there is. There's a shift, so we just need to all keep pushing ahead.
Good. And Sam?
Well, I think what I can say is this is a continuous learning process. Do not stop learning. Of course, attend as many hackathons as you can, because that's where you get to learn a lot more from your peers. When I was 20, about 21 years old, I was providing internet access to Virtual City. So he's way older. And I've learned a lot just being able to hang out with people like John and Mike and quite a number of people. So keep learning.
Okay. Thank you very much, panel, for the discussion. I hope the audience have been able to get some value from this. As I said, we can reach out to them post once we're done here. Follow up with them, have your questions asked, get some answers from them, and also continue to engage among yourselves and others as well around some of the things that you want to drive. So on behalf of Microsoft, I want to thank you guys for your presence here and wish you guys luck and continuous luck in all your endeavors that you're working on. So thank you very much, guys. And thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Dele. A big round of applause to our moderator and the panel.